Coming off, got Amin El-Hassan talking about game one of the NBA Finals. Knicks beating the Spurs 105-95 with seven things we learned in game one. Welcome to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We just watched game one of the NBA Finals. Knicks beat the Spurs here in San Antonio. Joining me, Amin El-Hassan. Amin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. We got a great game of basketball today. That's all you can really ask
for. I know. It was a wonderful game. I don't think the score indicates quite how close this game was, or a competitive game. We're going to go through seven things we learned in game one.
Counted.
I can count to seven. That's as far as I can go, actually. So we're going to start here with Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson, 30 points in the game, 19 points in the second half. Jalen Brunson, here to play. And for him, it looked like this Wemby adjustment wasn't quite as severe as it was for SGA last round, at least in game one.
So there was a couple of moments where he was doing the SGA thing, which is driving to the paint. Wemby's there and like, I'm not even looking at the rim. I'm trying to throw it out. And I was wondering, is this going to be the continuation? But you see how he started to figure out, kind of do the math of like, okay, these are my soft spots here that I can attack. We had two scares with him injury-wise in the first half, and that was everyone held their breath. But what is this going to mean for the Knicks if Jalen Brunson can't go? But luckily he came back, and he was excellent. He was exactly what, you know, Knicks fans have been touting him for and what everyone's kind of in Becky Hammond's mentions.
I was going to say, you're going to say the name?
Yeah. Well, her jersey's hanging right over there behind me. So
somewhere up here, yeah.
But, like, this is exactly what everyone's talking about. It's like, this is a guy – his size, I won't say his size doesn't matter in terms of his offense, but he's accustomed to it. He knows how to find his advantages. And tonight in that second half in particular, he did that.
I mean, it was interesting. Throughout the game, right, he was 6 of 20 when Wemby was on the floor, 6 of 11 when Cornette was on the floor. So the numbers do indicate, oh, he struggled when Wemby was on the floor. But you watch the second half of that game, to me, it looked like there was an adjustment, a more comfortability.
Right.
There was a play in which where I think like 6 or 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter where he drove into the basket. Mitchell Robinson sealed off Wemby on a layup. It was his second big layup within a minute. And it was like, okay, he's getting in a rhythm here against Wemby. The Knicks are learning how to do some things to free him up getting into the paint.
And it's weird. There's a bunch of stuff that doesn't show up on the box score. There's a play where Harrison Barnes bumps him, but he was throwing a lob to Mitchell Robinson, and he was telling the ref, don't call that foul. That's not a foul, right? But, you know, he did the pump the brakes thing. And even some of the misses, to be honest with you, in the second half, and particularly in the fourth quarter, there's a couple right here where he drives and then spins back, and it's a mid-range shot that he hits all the time, and Wemby's not near him. He just misses that shot that he normally makes.
And might hit them in game two.
Of course. And again, to me, it's like, and we'll talk about this in a second for someone else in this game, but he's a guy who knows where his spots are. And he knows, okay, this is how I'm going to get to it, and I'm going to be able to be successful at taking my shot. There's only a handful of shots I felt in the second half where it was like, okay, you're testing against Wemby. There's a layup, a kind of a runner right here on the right side. But beyond that, the shots that he missed, I wouldn't give all 14 of those misses
totally agree
to like, oh, Wemby scared him or anything like
100%
that.
100% agree. And I think that leads to the second point here. Number two, the Knicks are testing Wemby because in this game one today, the Knicks took 28% of their shots in the restricted area with Wemby on the floor. OKC for the series against Wemby took only 16%.
Right.
And they did, of course, get into the paint more when it was Cornette out there. With Cornette on the floor, 48% of their shots were at the rim, 24% of the percent of their shots were in the paint non-restricted area. So they were taking advantage of the time when Cornette was on the floor. But when Wemby was out there, it's not like their shot distribution was that far off
from
their regular season or rest of playoffs amount. And that, to me, was like pretty apparent, really, from the start of the game, and especially in the second half, that they were still getting in the paint.
So that's one of the interesting things, right? Like, conventional wisdom is he's down there, don't go down there. Right. But if you go down there and you engage with him, he may be successful in thwarting you. But now he has to expend the energy as opposed to just kind of playing like a goalkeeper without ever a strike on goal. Right. We're testing him. We're making him. OK, make these plays. Make these amazing blocks. Box out. Get hit in the chest by guys under the rim. And what ends up happening is there's an attrition. They're wearing him down. Mm-hmm. You saw that fourth quarter and you saw where his shot selection was. He's tired.
Yeah.
And this was look, credit to Jeremy Sochan. We all laugh, but it's like, it's got a point, man. Like, yeah. If we're looking for the Achilles heel, remember Achilles, the Greek mythological figure, his mother dipped him in the River Styx, and the only part of him that was not invincible was just his Achilles heel. For Wemby, it's his, at this point of his career, it's his exhaustion levels, right? His ability to have stamina out there. But you don't erode that by avoiding him. The only way you can erode it is by going right at him and make him do those things, because at some point he gets tired, you know?
And I think ultimately, like, the Knicks do prevent a different style of test than the Thunder did.
Yeah.
A, they have creation across positions. The Thunder were missing A.J. Mitchell, mm-hmm. Mitchell and missing Jalen Williams. They didn't have it. They're sometimes relying on Alex Caruso to bring the ball up or initiate in the half court. The Knicks have shooting across positions. Mm-hmm. And if it's not Landry Shamet out there or not Deuce McBride, Josh Hart, in this game, he statistically didn't have a great scoring game, and yet I felt like his offensive impact was so massive because he can bring the ball up. He can set a screen. He can move, constantly moving around and cutting and
offensive
screening.
Offensive rebounds.
Constantly engaging Victor Wembanyama or spacing him out, I think proved to be a much greater challenge for the Spurs defense than what the Thunder were able to do last round.
I also want to give credit to the bigs, Karl-Anthony Towns and Mitchell Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
They made life hard for him. They utilized their size in a way that, even though Oklahoma City had Jalen Williams and Hartenstein, even though Minnesota had Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid, today was the first time I felt like, oh man, like, he's struggling because these guys are big and they're not as easy to shoot over or get around. And again, they made him work. And isn't that the story of the NBA? It's like, hey, he's going to get his 40 or whatever. That's what we always say about everyone, whether it was Michael Jordan or Kobe or whoever. But it's like, how can we make him work to get it? How can it be like a slog, a tough day at the office for him en route to his brilliance, as opposed to, well, right this way, Mr. Wembanyama?
Yes, exactly. And I think you mentioned Mitchell Robinson and Karl-Anthony Towns, Cat, man. I mean, like, everything shifted for him in the middle of that Atlanta series, and he's continued rolling throughout this entire postseason. I thought he played a great game defensively, too.
Yeah.
Again, whether he's defending Wemby or whether he wasn't. And Mitchell Robinson, the question with him about his pinky injury, mm-hmm. he caught a lob, and they were effectively grabbing. They won the rebound battle. They won the second chance point battle, the Knicks did, in part because of their bigs.
Yeah. This Mitchell Robinson pinky thing. I was like, is there anyone in the league who would be less affected by it?
No.
Like, come on, man. Like, oh my God, was it when we miss his feathery touch?
40% free throw shooters.
Maybe
it'll help him. That's what I was thinking.
When he went to the free throw line, I was like, oh, is this guy?
What if he suddenly becomes an 80% guy without, like, the pinky?
Yeah, but no, he did a great job. You know what I loved about both him and Towns is whenever a shot went up for San Antonio, they made it a point to put a body on Wemby. Yep. I mean, Wemby still got a couple of tips and kind of like tip it to himself, but it was always with a body all the way down on his knees, taking him out from underneath. And I think that's so important. Again, he's tall. We get it. But there has to be a part of this where he's going to beat you because he's tall, not because you gave up.
Absolutely. Up number three here, I mean. Another series, the Spurs can't survive without Wemby on the floor. In this game one, Spurs had a 92.4 defensive rating with Wemby on the floor, according to Offsides live tracking data there, with and without data. With Cornette out there, 128.1. And we saw in that fourth quarter, they tried to get Cornette out there. He didn't even last a minute in the fourth quarter. And this was, to me, one of the keys entering the series. It's like Cornette as an X factor is not – what you want to think about, but ultimately, if those Cornette lineups cannot survive against the Knicks either,
right.
To me, I think Mitch Johnson is going to have to think about, is there something else we can do? Do we need to go double big a little bit? Do we need to go fully small ball? How can you survive or possibly just stay even in those minutes when Wemby's not out there?
Well, it's funny because in the third quarter, when the lead was 13 and Wemby sat, for the first two or three possessions, the notes I wrote were like, Knicks are not taking advantage of the non-Wemby minutes, of the Cornette minutes, because Harper got to the hole, Castle had a shot, and it looked like, okay, this is where they're going to blow it open. But again, this is the veteran savvy. It's like, settle down. The big fella's not out there. This is the part where we're going to be more intentional with our offense going towards the rim. And that we saw that lead whittle down all the way down to, was it five before Wemby came back? And that was the transformation of what should have been San Antonio coasting to a win to, okay, now we've got a game. And I know I look like a fool. Everyone in San Antonio is laughing at me because for at least two rounds I've been saying, well, I don't know, man, this youth thing, like at some point, when it is your first time at the rodeo, it rears its head at the worst moments. But they've showed incredible poise so far. But tonight was a night where it's like, oh, that's what youth looks like.
Yes.
And not knowing situationally, hey, what should we do right now?
And I think along those lines, that was felt for the fourth point here. The Spurs seemed discombobulated offensively. Mm-hmm. Just this the team, you did feel the youth. You felt the injury with Fox as well,
yep.
Or just the lack of ability. Got stripped by Josh Hart,
yep.
The ball up the floor. The Spurs offense just felt a little bit out of rhythm the whole game. What did you see from San Antonio and why they were never able to really find some cohesiveness?
There didn't seem to be a plan. There's no structure. Again, we can play all vibes in the meat of a game, right? 10-point game, 8-point game. Get a stop. They're so incredible defensively. They can get a stop, get out on the break, get some easy baskets. We saw that in the first half with Dylan Harper. But at some point in playoff games, especially the deeper you go, it slows down. And it slows down, and now we're talking about who's going to make a mistake and who's not. And so in order to avoid mistakes, veteran teams know. Veteran players know, hey, this is my spot. I'm trying to get to this spot. We talked about it earlier with Brunson. So, and then veteran teams know, hey, we're trying to get him the ball here versus a young team. We're just playing basketball. And Wemby's like, all right, I'm in the corner. I guess I'll do something here. Like, hey, I'm at the top. You know what? I feel like taking a three. I talked about this with you before we went on air. Game one of the Western Conference Finals. Wemby takes that three from deep, and everyone loses their mind. And they should. It was a great shot. It's a memorable shot. It's going to live
on
in history.
Right near the Steph double back
right
shot.
Near
right near the same
absolutely.
Spot. On the same court.
And it ends up being kind of one of those swing plays that lets them steal game one. Victor Wembanyama was a 34.9% three-point shooter during the season. 34.9% three-point shooter up to that point in the playoffs. That's not a good shot. It's not a good shot. If he misses it, we sit around here talking about exactly what we talked about right now. The lack of structure, the lack of intention, the just playing off of vibes. That's what a young team does. He makes the shot. he's a goat for history, right? It's like, this is an amazing chapter in like what's going to be one of the greatest stories ever told. But my point is, that wasn't a good shot. Like, and what makes it a good shot or not isn't whether it goes in. It's like, is this a smart play? Is this a heady play in this moment? We saw tonight what it looks like when he doesn't make those shots and when they don't make those shots. And again, a game that was with 3 minutes to go, nip and tuck, ends up being a final score that's, like you said, not indicative of
for
what
sure.
a great game we had.
I mean, I think on the note of Wemby, he was 6 of 21 mm-hmm. in the game. And it just felt like a lot of the shots he was taking, he's just tossing it up at the rim. Doesn't have that spot that on the floor, as you said, with Jalen Brunson and veteran players. He's 22 years old.
Yeah.
He's in the third year of his career. He's still in the infancy of his development offensively. And I think that's where that shot, that game, with when he has 40 and 20 in game one against the defending champions, it's like, oh my goodness, this is a preview of what's to come.
Right.
It's already here.
Right.
It's already here in reality. It's not already here. It's going to happen some nights, but we saw last round against OKC, he had games like this.
Right.
Where he just can't get it going offensively. He's streaky from three-point range, doesn't quite have the handle, doesn't have a spot or a go-to
yeah.
move on the floor.
And again, the team also, right, we could say, hey, let's do a better job of getting in catches closer to the rim. They didn't do that.
No.
There's a lot of guys just kind of, again, playing off of vibes. And to me, it's always fascinating to me when we think about all the great players in NBA history, and their greatness most of the time comes later in their career, right? After they've been around a while. And the reason for that is less of the game becomes reaction and more of the game becomes like, oh no, I set you up to get to this point right here. I've seen every coverage. I know every counter. I know exactly what they're going to try to do here, so I'm going to try and get them over here so that they do the thing that they're supposed to do there, but they don't know that I already know what I'm going to do next. Younger guys are playing off a reaction. It's like, I drove this way, so then I decided to just come back this way. There's no plan there. It's just I'm playing off of the vibes. And that's why, again, we don't typically see young teams like this get this far.
Next point, this really relates to what we're just talking about here. Dylan Harper probably needs to play more, right? Yeah. I think he probably needs to exceed De'Aaron Fox in minutes here. I don't want to, like, go overboard and say he definitely needs to. But tonight, 10 points in the first quarter, plus 13 in the first quarter, just was amazing after the fast start by the Knicks. 27 minutes in the game for him. Fox had almost 40. Fox got stripped by Josh Hart. He was brutal in the game. Right. He again looked like the inexperienced point guard. I don't know how much this is due to the foot injury or just the fact there's something limitations wise in this setting. I don't know. I think it's largely injury, but regardless of the factor, Dylan Harper looks like the far better point guard in these recent weeks, and especially today in game one. So I wonder if Mitch Johnson is going to look at this and say, "Hey, De'Aaron, come off the bench, provide a spark, help out these Cornette lineups.
Yeah.
We need Harper in the starting five."
I wonder, see, this is what I wonder about. I don't know if Dylan Harper's ball handling at this point is tight enough to withstand pressure.
Well, we saw Cason Wallace strip him twice in, I think, game five, I believe, last round.
Right, and so
Caruso did too.
If you throw out, whether it's Hart, whether it's Anunoby, whether it's even Alvarado, who had a really solid game for the Knicks tonight.
Him and Champagne John each other.
Hey, oh, that's I love that. That back and forth was very so fun, great. Yeah.
Alvarado hit one and Champagne, and they were like really talking.
Two New York guys talking.
So good. I loved it.
But yeah, so like that, I don't know if Dylan Harper, that's the part of his game I don't know if it's ready. He's excellent whenever he gets a one-on-one kind of in the half court.
Space to work, right?
His footwork is impeccable. He's great at finishing. He's got the off speed kind of like I said, it's like the guy, the Instagram guy, was like, "Oh, and this is legal on all three levels." You know, he takes 700 steps, and the step's like, "You can go faster or slower. It's your last step. It doesn't matter." But the thing what you're talking about is you're saying, "Hey, I'm going to start him, and now he's got to bring it up against this pressure," and that's a different level. Again, for as mature as he is as a 20-year-old, I don't know if that's the best thing for him. Maybe. The balance, like you said, is maybe more than 27. Maybe Fox doesn't play 40, but I don't know if I would switch the lineup quite yet because
totally understand.
I still trust Fox more to bring the ball up against pressure.
For sure, and I think that's also a dramatic chemistry decision too. Like if Fox is happy with that. I mean, obviously it's the NBA Finals, you better accept it if they put that on you. But I do think Harper needs to play a bit more now.
And we'll be right back after this break.
Mitch Johnson, does he need to change his rotations here? Because you mentioned that third quarter earlier around the 7-minute mark when Wemby came out. Spurs were up 13. At that moment in the game, I was thinking to myself, like, okay, there's a moment they could potentially stomp out and kill the Knicks here in this game one, extend this to 20. They pull Wemby out at his typical time, around 7 minutes left. I thought in that moment, maybe Mitch Johnson should keep him in for two more minutes, see how this continues.
See if they could push it.
And hindsight's 20-20 here and all that. And they ended up blowing the lead. It got to 5, as you said. But related to the conversation earlier, the non-Wemby minutes were just terrible again.
But the flip side, KOC, man, is he gets tired.
I know.
And so now if he does that, and the fourth quarter happens the same way it did. 100%. We're sitting here talking about, I can't believe you can't. Yeah. Right, you know, you guys have been doing it this way all this time. Why would you change? There's no.
Isn't there a feel? I mean, like sometimes, like in that moment, they have momentum. Right. They're rolling. Their defense is clicking. Their offense is clicking. Everything was working for the Spurs at the moment they pulled Wemby out, and then it felt like that's where everything shifted in the game.
I would say no, because I feel like for at least a minute or so afterward, it looked like, oh, no, they don't even need him. Here comes Harper. Here comes Castle. What I would say is this. They need a better plan. They need a better structure, something organized to go to. I remember when I worked for the Suns, we had this problem with Steve Nash. Steve Nash is on the floor. Our plus-minus was through the roof, right? Or his plus-minus adjusted was through the roof. He was by far the most impactful player in the NBA. But he sat down and everything collapsed. Why? Because our entire offense was built off pick and roll with Steve, and now Steve's like a computer who's doing all these calculations like, okay, now that means that guy's going to be open, and he's finding everyone. And once Steve was out there, it didn't matter who you put in his stead to run those pick and rolls, they just weren't processing it like Steve could. And so what we ended up doing under Coach Alvin Gentry is when Goran Dragic would come in the game, we had a completely different offense. We ran a motion offense. a lot of stuff up to the high post and back screens and all that. And it did two things. One, it freed Goran from the responsibility of, I got to be Steve Nash. But also, it took advantage of what Goran does really well, which is score the ball. He was a much better scorer than a distributor. And so, and through that, everyone else knew that they could get their offense as well. They weren't relying on, hey, well, Goran's not going to find me or whatever. So I look at the Spurs, and it, obviously it's different because it's Wemby versus Cornette. Cornette's not asked to do those things. And like you said earlier, maybe it's we play small. Maybe we play him and Wemby at the same time. But through it all, I keep going back to, there's got to be a structure. There has to be, guys, okay, things aren't working off vibes. Settle down. We're going to run this, and we're going to execute. And if that can't happen, the only other recourse I have is, like, your defense has to be world class, and you're just turning them over, and we're getting transition buckets.
And like I said earlier, it was not world class with Cornette. 128.1 defensive rating with Cornette out there tonight. 92.4 with Wemby. It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think for the Spurs, like, Cornette is probably the best backup center you could hope for in the league. He's a really good player. He is.
It's a bad matchup. It's not a great matchup for him, you know. I don't know.
And he's supposedly dealing with some injury as well, but I don't feel it as a factor.
Well, you know who else is dealing with injury? The guy that had an and-one and dunked all over him. Right?
Literally everybody. And Jalen Brunson is, like, tugging at his lower leg two times in the first half. Yeah. He's dealing with something. Everybody's dealing with something at this stage of the season. Number seven here. Spurs used different defensive looks against the Knicks. I thought this was interesting. The whole talk entering the finals was, we're going to see a Wemby defending Josh Hart. Well, Wemby starts the game
on
defending Karl-Anthony Towns. Yep. Second half, they mixed it up a bit more. Sometimes he was defending Kat. Sometimes he was defending Hart. Sometimes he started on Kat, ended up defending Hart, switching off of that. That is something of interest to me moving forward in this series, the fact that they didn't start off doing what everybody thought that they were going to do, defending Josh Hart. Is there anything that you thought worked better for the Spurs defense in this game one?
I was really interested when they went to zone. I was like, let's see what this looks like. And then OG Anunoby got loose. And it was just like that. And, you know, you credit the Knicks. Like, think about how many different people they have who can contribute to the point where it's like OG Anunoby, who's been great for them, really wasn't having a good game. But then he has a couple of shots there. And
hit the three, kind of triple threat in front of Wemby and from the corner.
Yep, one from the corner as well.
That's nice.
So, but yeah, I think the zone has some potential there, especially if they continue to mix it up. I think when you're dealing with a guy like Jalen Brunson in particular, you can't give him the same look every single time, because then he's just doing what, like I said, he's getting his spot, whatever. So now you've got to figure out, how do I keep him guessing? And then obviously, how do we keep Wemby from not straying that far away from the paint? But again, I think the Knicks are between the shooting, and then they do a great job of offensive rebounding, whether it's Mitchell Robinson, Cat right at the rim, or guys like Hart coming from the three-point line and just rushing the rim, basically. It makes it really tough to be amorphous, amoebic with your defense, because you've got so many things to worry about.
In that second half, Champagne cooled off. He had 15 points in the first half, one in the second half. Is there anything that you saw that the Knicks were doing defensively to change that, or was that just cooled off? Straight up.
He's a shooter. Sometimes they're hot, sometimes they're not. We saw that entering the conference finals, right? He was shooting 60%, whatever. And then he had that stretch against the Thunder where it was like, can't make anything.
He's a fake shooter.
It's one of those things where it's something that when it's working, you go to it. And when it's not working, you can't rely on it anymore. We've got to forget. And that goes back to what I say. There has to be some amount of structure of, we're going to get our best players the ball in the most advantageous positions. I can't guarantee you a score when I draw something up. Mm-hmm. But if we execute, I know I'm going to get Wemby on the block. I know I'm going to get Fox with the defense kind of trailing. I know I'm going to get Castle headed to the rim. But it's got to be something structured. It can't just be off of vibes.
One of the things I'm concerned about, and this is like one of the looking ahead to game two things, mm-hmm. Spurs shot 26% from three in game one. Knicks only shot 31%. I feel a lot better about the odds of the Knicks having a 45% shooting night from three. And that'd be one of the things I'm nervous about from the Spurs side of things. The fact that we lost by 10 with the Knicks having a horrible shooting night from three compared to their standards.
Right. And also, the Knicks unlike the Spurs, their three-point shooters know who they are. Wemby taking some of those threes. Castle, I know he hit one, and I was like, as soon as he hit that one, I'm like, well, now he thinks he can hit him. And there has to be a realization of this is something that is a counter. This is something sometimes in the flow of the game, I'll do it. But my intention is to get to the rim. Whereas I don't have any problem with Brunson taking a step back, Shamit doing whatever he does.
Oh, my God. Shamit step back three. God. The skill level in the NBA is insane when Landry Shamit's taking step back threes and drilling them.
OG Anunoby. Like, all of these guys, like, other than Hart. Hart's probably the only one where I'm like, all right, maybe. Yeah.
Settle down.
Settle down. Right?
Move
but
the ball.
Everyone else, like, I feel good about the three-point attempts. Cat, obviously. Mm-hmm. The Spurs, if it's Champagne, if it's Fox, if it's Vassell, I feel good. When it's Castle, when it's Wemby, I feel like the Knicks breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, thank God. They took one from outside. If they hit it, they hit it. But they're content with giving up those shots.
What's the number one thing you're going to be watching for entering game two?
Oof. Well, first of all, I want to see how this young Spurs team responds, right? This is, even though they were down 3-2 in the conference finals, this felt like a pain I don't think they've felt before in terms of we had the game and we blew the game and it happened down the stretch because we were making mistakes. Mm-hmm. So there's two paths. One path is we learn from it and we'll be smarter and shrewder. The other path is, I got to make up for that mistake I made. And you almost make more mistakes trying to press the issue.
And that's where the youth pops up.
That's where the youth pops up. So we'll see how they react. And then also, can they turn up the defensive pressure on the Knicks full court? The same thing I talked about Wemby, make Brunson work. Okay, he's going to break it, but like, how can we make him wear down over the course of a game so he's not feeling as fresh as he was in the fourth quarter?
Especially given the fact that he's clearly dealing with
something. He's dealing with something.
They got that intel now that there's something going on that is an issue for him.
Yeah.
That popped up in the first half temporarily.
Yep.
And he was fine after that. He looked amazing. It looked like Jalen Brunson in the second half.
Right.
No problems at all. You didn't have no idea what happened in the first half. But there's something. And so maybe working him more when he's bringing the ball up, forcing them to bring the ball up with somebody else, slowing them down, getting into their half-court offense 2 seconds slower than they would have otherwise, not in their ideal position. And that can all add up over the course of a game.
There was a possession, I want to say it was Towns and Bridges. And Wemby just kind of stood right here. And it took him legit about 15 seconds just to get the ball in position that they wanted to. And, you know, which is, I think, a Towns post-up on Wemby. But that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about, that erosion of stamina. Because I had to work so hard just to get into the thing that I wanted to get into to begin with. And that happens when Brunson's not on the floor and other guys have to kind of orchestrate that. We talked about McBride having problems bringing up the ball up court. We talked about Hart and all these guys. Anytime they're having to do stuff, if you're the Spurs, you got to feel good about yourself, about what we're doing defensively. The trick is, how can we up that pressure? And we're turning it into turnovers, turning those turnovers into baskets on the other end.
I mean, this was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, man.
Great to have you here tonight.
Let me do the obligatory, I hope we get 6 more of these. It's a fun game. I had a great time.
I had a great time, too. I mean, look, it was a 10-point game. Felt a lot closer, really, until the end. And I think we could be really in store for an epic series. I know, like, it's, you know, it's the obligatory thing to say, but it could be.
Oh, man.
We could be setting up for that.
This is the best part of the NBA playoffs. The fans go through this. The media goes through this. Sometimes the players go through this. When you win, it feels like you're never going to lose again.
Exactly.
And when you lose, it feels like you've got no shot. And so as I was walking over here to the spot, there's a bunch of Knicks fans out there, and they were all cheering and stuff.
Oh,
and they were saying, hey, I mean, what you got? And, like, and I said, my pick was Knicks in 7. Yeah. And they looked at me like I was crazy. Like,
in 7?
4. So, like, I can't wait for Friday night.
I mean, well, that's one thing we didn't hit. The Knicks fans in here tonight, they were louder than some home crowds are across the league.
This is what I would say. When the Spurs fans were, this isn't like Philly where it's like legitimately, what's the ratio here? When the Spurs fans were loud, you could not hear the Knicks fans. But the Knicks team did things to make the fans quiet. And when they did, there was a sizable amount of Knicks fans all over the arena. and they were loud. And my favorite was when Brunson goes to the line. And they start chanting MVP, yeah, and I was like, oh, man.
I know. I mean, I noticed it before the game walking through the concourse, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm seeing a lot of Knicks jerseys, Knicks colors in the crowd.
What's the most obscure jersey you saw? Because that's my favorite thing is to see, well, okay.
I mean, I think we might have seen it as we were.
Oh, that's right.
A Jeremy Sohan Knicks jersey.
God, I wish I took that picture,
man. I know.
Man.
We both rushed to grab our phones, but he was gone.
There was a guy with a Jeremy Sohan Knicks jersey. I was like,
what a troll.
Yeah.
Or he's like a hardcore Spurs fan.
He was mad that
they let him go. And he wanted a Knicks jersey. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Until now, I forgot about that guy.
He was here late, like in the friends and family section, which was nearby us. So maybe he's a Sohan friend.
Yeah, maybe.
Family member,
right? You know what? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's Sohan, like an affiliate or adjacent, right? Other than that, I saw a guy wearing a David Lee, and his buddies wearing a Marbury jersey. So I was like, oh, what a great little tandem right there.
David Lee. Wow. Replaced by Draymond at Golden State, but a hell of a career, David Lee.
Well, David Lee, once a Knick, always a Knick.
Wow, that's true.
And by the way, you know how David Lee became a Knick? Guys, this is a treat for you guys. So he was the 30th overall pick in the 2005 draft. The reason why the Knicks were off at the 30th overall pick in the 2005 draft is because they acquired it from the San Antonio Spurs, who had the best record. This was the Nazi Muhammad Malik Rose deal.
Wow.
It's Nazi Muhammad, Jackie Butler, for Malik Rose and two first-round picks, and one of them turned out to be David Lee.
What a career.
Yeah, man.
David Lee, NBA champion.
NBA champion.
Once a Knick, forever a Knick. Amin El-Hassan, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Thank you. That's Amin. That's all for today here from San Antonio on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thank you to everybody who watched us live. Thank you to everybody who listened. Thanks for everybody who put the show together. Have a good rest of your night.